Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to All Exits Closed. I'm Cynthia Fuller, and my guest today is my friend, retired Dr. Peter Cookson. And Peter is going to talk about the direction of COVID-19 in human health. So, you know, Peter, I watch the news, I do my social distancing, and it looks like everything is spiking again. What do you think?
Well, it certainly is spiking again. What that is a result of is, pardon me, initially the directions that came from our leadership was that we need to appreciate how important and how dangerous this virus is. And so they recommended that we wear masks, that we wash our hands, and that we practice social distancing. And that worked for a while until people decided that they didn't want to do that. But I think that before that, more important than that, leadership realized or was informed or instructed by the real leadership of this country, which are the corporate giants in this country, which realized that there was a sudden massive economic impact on their income, their businesses, that was resulting from people not using airplanes, people not going to restaurants, people not going to other modes of transportation, people not going to schools and using all of the ancillary financial impacts that schools have besides collecting children each day for most of the day, but that has to do with who feeds the children and the chain of supplies that bring food and other important commodities that schools depend upon. Anyhow, the point that I'm making is that although there was a fatigue on the part of the citizens of this country, there was a much greater impact, economic impact, which affected those persons who are our, quote, leaders, unquote, who take directions from the people who really own and operate this country. And it's certainly not the people who sit in the houses of legislators or legislatures in the various states, and certainly not in Washington, D.C., where the people who collect there and determine the distribution of the public funds for the rest of the citizens. So anyhow, when that happened, they said, okay, that's enough of this. Let's open it up. And so they opened it up, and some people went out and said they trusted our leadership and trusted that our leaders knew what they were doing when they said it's okay for you to attend parties. It's okay for you to go to the beaches. It's okay for you to ignore the importance of wearing masks. And they believed our leaders, and not very long afterwards, many people got sick. And this coronavirus is not a flu. It's far more potent or toxic than any flu or cold that we routinely anticipate or we routinely encounter in our existence, on a day-to-day existence. One of the things that you and I discussed last week or 2 weeks ago was that what is going to happen? Our leaders told us that this will go away. I don't know where away is, but this will go away if we just be patient. And yes, the answer to that question is yes, it will go away. And going away means the term that they use is it will become endemic, which means that it will be part of our civilization. And I use that term loosely under those circumstances. And our civilization has dealt with infectious diseases in the past, to the point where those persons who were susceptible to the disease died off. And those persons who had were able to develop an immunity, they survived, and they passed that capability along to their offspring. This process has occurred in the past and has taken a long, long time. Optimistic proposals or suggestions for the coronavirus are as, oh, we can develop herd immunity within 2 to 3 years. Well, perhaps that's possible, but I will tell you that the road to herd immunity is very bumpy, and many, many of our senior citizens will die on that road, as well as some of our young children, and many of our teenage children will also die on that road to herd immunity. If you're willing to trade off your children and your senior citizens, your wisdom that has accumulated over the age in our senior citizens, if you're willing to trade that for herd immunity, which you don't know when the heck that will ever occur, why, you're trading a political situation or a political demand for economic development and growth for the lives of thousands of our citizens. And I'm not willing to go down that bumpy road because I'm in the senior citizen category.
Yeah.
And I talked to a couple of teachers, local school teachers here in Sharon Springs, a very small central school, but they also say they are unwilling to sacrifice their children or their health in the expectation that if you send the children to school, they won't get sick, and neither will the people who take care of the cafeteria, the people who drive the buses, the people who maintain the buildings and so on. Oh, they won't get sick. Well, that's crazy. That's truly crazy. What's going on here? What's going on, in my opinion, is the governmental agencies that are responsible for making the decision to send the children and the teachers and the bus drivers and the cafeteria workers, et cetera, back into an area which is guaranteed to foster the spread of this virus, because they have lost tremendous amount of revenue or money, or there's money lost in the schools. And if we destroy the schools, then perhaps we can change the school system that exists today, the public school system, and replace it with something different, just like they did in New Orleans after Hurricane Katrina went through and destroyed the public school systems there, and they replaced it with the charter schools. That hasn't worked nearly as well as we would like, or as the public school systems would like. So there are other agendas played out here that have little or nothing, in my opinion, to do with the health and well-being of the citizens of this country. If the citizens was the primary responsibility of our leadership, this would not be contemplated. And they would continue to print money. Go ahead, dear.
We're at the end of July.
Yes.
And then it'll be a few short weeks before, you know, kids will be going back to school in New York State. And in some parts of the country, they start school in August.
Yes.
Okay. If there's a spike and young kids are hit, they're going to have to close everything down. Wouldn't you agree?
Yes. The parents will demand that, or they will respond by taking their children out of school.
Okay. Okay.
The parents have a remark. Go ahead, dear.
The reason I'm asking you this is because President is adamant about schools reopening.
Yes, the president may be adamant about it, but the virus operates on an altogether different wavelength. The virus will behave as a virus does behave, which is to seek new hosts. And the, it does that in the case of the coronavirus. It seeks new hosts through the spread of aerosols that are created when we talk or cough or sneeze or those spit out into the atmosphere, into the air. The virus does not care about what our politicians or our leadership or what our politician class has decided. And the politician class takes orders from the corporate class.
Mm-hmm.
These people, you know, do not act independently. And if you talk to teachers, you will find, and parents and mothers of small children, you will find that they are opposed to sending their children back into schools because they know what happens in September and October to their children in years past. They all come home sick within a week or two, and they generally get over it. They get over the endemic viruses that live in our population. It doesn't kill the children. Now, corona will behave very differently. So, yeah, they will vote with their feet. Now, will the schools remain open in view of the fact that many of the students are either sick or do not come to school? Well, what I can say is that in the past, in this small community and in Cherry Valley, when the number of students who are absent exceeds a certain percentage, they simply close it.
Mm-hmm.
And they have done that in the past. So that may take place. So the concern of the school administrators is for the children and for their employees. It's not for corporate America. And they will respond appropriately and say, this is not working. Our children are at risk, and I will not sit here and watch the children for whom I am responsible get sick and be placed at risk. We have really good people at the level of a school administration whose primary concern is the children, unlike others whose primary concern is the economy.
So let's clarify. Cherry Valley, for people who might be outside the area listening to this, Cherry Valley is in upstate New York, and it's not too far from Cooperstown,
yes,
which is where the Baseball Hall of Fame is. I want to go back in history a little bit.
Please.
Let's go back to the two big pandemics that we know of, the Black Plague, which happened in the Middle Ages, and the 1918 pandemic. Okay,
yes.
Let's start with the Black Plague.
Yes.
When people think of the Black Plague, they think of feudalism. They think of people who were born in an area, you know, don't travel out of that area. They stay in that area all their lives. So there's not much of social interaction. They might be with the family. I don't really know what the economy looked like. Feudalism, I guess, was farming and stuff. But, you know, it's that society is nowhere near what we know of and what we live through today. So when you talk about the Black Plague, I mean, it destroyed the lives of, you know, literally millions of people across the world. Why did it spread so quickly if there wasn't the social interaction that we have today?
Okay. First of all, I would challenge your comment about why did it spread so quickly. It actually took a while for it to get from its first appearance in Western Europe, in Italy, I believe in either Venice or Genoa, when it was brought there by the merchants who had picked it up in Turkey, or what's now Turkey or Southeast, and Eastern or Western Asia. They brought it there, and it took a while to go from city to city or from community to community and village to village. What you say is that the feudalism system does bring to mind a number of isolated villages or isolated groups of persons or peasants mainly who are dominated by the lord of the manor, who has the equivalent of his police force keeping the peasants in line and collecting the taxes.
Mm-hmm.
But there are persons who move from village to village, or from from village to village or city to city. They can bring along with them the disease. Now, it's more difficult to transfer the bubonic plague than it is the coronavirus, because the bubonic plague acts more quickly in terms of the time between actually contact or contracting or getting the disease and the time when you're dead as a result
mm-hmm.
of it. That can be as short a period of time as 1 day or 3 or 4 days. So if somebody who is a peddler carrying his wares from one village to another has to be in move very quickly if he wants to carry along the disease. So it took a few years or so before the plague started in Italy, made its way into Britain. But it was devastating. So what is the difference? I think I lost my track here. And what, help me with the question again.
Back then, there was not as much social
interaction.
There is today.
No,
but
I agree.
It did spread.
So what I think your point is well taken, and that is the disease that we are faced because of airplanes, because of travel that is facilitated by modern means, we can spread the disease much more rapidly.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, no doubt about that. What does that mean? I'm not sure that means anything except that a whole lot more people are going to get sick a whole lot sooner. In 1918, we took care of that problem by moving troops from from the United States to Europe without any difficulty at all. We just collected them into camps. We called them cantonments.
Yeah.
And then put them on boats and sent them to France, or sent them to fight in Europe during the World War II. There were people who were coming from elsewhere who had contracted the disease. Who knows how? It was really complex. So you want to say that the Chinese did it, but no. Good people have said no. This started in Kansas, and
mm-hmm.
moved very quickly from there. And you can track it. The military kept fairly decent records as far as how they transferred the soldiers around from one camp to another. And they transferred them around, and then they sent them to Europe. And once they got to Europe, why they can't transfer those people were moved around in Europe. And then all you needed to do was to transfer a few of them. And the disease was so highly contagious, just like the coronavirus is, that it just spread very quickly throughout Europe. And
would you say that if there was not a wartime scenario back then, the influenza of 1918, or however you want to phrase it, would not have been as devastating as it was?
Yes. That's a
okay.
one-word answer. Absolutely. Right.
Okay.
It would have taken a lot longer for the people to move from, Kansas to Paris, France, it probably wouldn't have happened. Or if it would have happened, it would have taken years or a lot longer back then for that disease. And by the time it got there, it would have modified itself in one way or another, either become more virulent, and that would have limited its spread. The more virulent it is, the quicker the host dies off, and then the shorter the period of time, and then the shorter the distance that the host is able to travel before he collapses. So my bet is, the answer to your question is, yeah, we, the, the disease would not have spread as far and certainly not as quickly had there not been a wartime. And there was another problem with wartime, and that was the political situation that was in force at the time was that thou shalt not say anything bad about the war effort and saying anything about the presence of a virus or of a pandemic in the United States will get you in jail. And that was not helpful at all in terms of preventing the spread of the disease. If the the mainstream media at the time would not say anything about the virus and how many people were getting sick, because that would be against the Alien and Sedition Act, or they would be called people who were not supporting the war effort, put it that way.
Okay. Now let's come up to 2020. You know, we definitely have political divisions in this country.
Yes.
And there's black and white, but there's no gray areas. So either you think to the left or you think to the right, and the people who think to the right think that this whole thing was perpetrated by the Obama administration, and it's pretty ugly. So do you think that the political climate as we know it today is a cause of the spread of the virus?
It's certainly contributory. Absolutely. No question about it. And the political climate that we find ourselves in today is not something that was created by our present leader in the White House. It was something that was created over a long period of time. He happens to be the current resident there who is taking the flack for what was created over the course of the last minimum 30 years, but probably 50 or even 60 years. It began in Tulane University or New Orleans back in the early 60s during the Kennedy administration. And there are bits and pieces of data that are in the public domain that indicate that bio-warfare activity has been conducted in laboratories in the United States for a very long period of time. And there are instances of that activity that have surfaced and people have chosen to ignore, but at their own risk. When you look at what happened around 9/11 and the anthrax, quote, scare, unquote, and trace it back to where you find it, or the origin of the anthrax scare, you find it was in a biowarfare laboratory in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
So, now this has been going on, and to blame the current resident or ascribe all of the blame to the current resident is not fair to him as an individual, but the process of the system that we call capitalism, that's just owned and operated by a very few elites at the top of that corporate ladder, is really where we should focus our attention and see. Just look and see what's going on here. And there was a documentary on the television this morning about how the industrial center of the United States, which is currently referred to as the Rust Belt, was destroyed, but it took a long period of time. And it was a concerted effort on the part of the corporatists to find cheap labor away from union labor shops. And they moved the corporate empire that sustained our country and created a middle class for us. They moved it to Mexico and they moved it to China and wherever else where they could find cheap labor. Whatever word you want to use to characterize cheap labor, but that's what they were trying to do, is to reduce their costs so that they could maximize their profits. That's called capitalism, and that's what's going on now. And those people who think that way say, open the schools. We don't give a darn. All we want is the money that's generated by the children going to school. Or we want to change this, watch the schools collapse and then install our own schools. And there we call them corporate, not corporate schools, but charter schools. So it's all about money as far as the decisions that are made to reverse the efforts that were originally put in place to save the citizens from getting sick and from dying, reverse that to putting people back to work. It won't work, ultimately. The virus will have its way.
What you're saying is pretty frightening. To sacrifice children for another form of education,
Yes. That's
terrible.
Yes, it is. The whole thing is terrible. Exactly. The whole point is money first, corporations first, economy first. People take their own. I'll read to you on page 460 of The Great Influenza. There was terror afoot in 1918, real terror. The randomness of death brought that terror home. And what society cannot function if it's every man for himself, which is where we're going. The people of this country are becoming aware of the fact that the direction, the directors are directing them in a different, direction that is not in the best interest of the citizens. And I brought that to your attention when I said that I have done some interviews, personal interviews, with people who are involved in the school system directly, parents and teachers. And they said, no, we are not going to pay attention. What has happened is that at least in this small group, in this small area in upstate New York, they no longer trust the leadership to look after the best interests of the citizens. The government has lost the trust of the citizens. When that happens, then you see what's going on in Portland, Seattle, Chicago, and elsewhere in this country. The citizens don't trust, and they have not been heard until they go out onto the streets. And the response of the corporatists has been to attempt to crush the rebellion, quote unquote, of the people, and they will make every effort to crush it. It won't be long before we see tanks and armored personnel carriers, et cetera, on the streets of Portland and Seattle and Chicago, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, on that note, we have to close our time is up. So, Peter, I always enjoy talking with you, and I hope we'll have many other discussions as the coronavirus evolves.
It will
so
evolve.
Okay. So you've been listening to retired Dr. Peter Cookson. I'm Cynthia Pooler. This is All Exit Closed. If you like this show, follow us on Twitter. Thanks, Peter. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Have a great day.
Okay, I will. Bye.